A warning for our listeners. This podcast includes themes of substance use, abuse, and addiction. Statistics on the rates of substance use are taken from self-reported surveys from students. These are compiled in the National College Health Assessment.
Tear down this wall.
From AWOL, this is Ripped from the Wall. I'm Braden Waddell.
And I'm Sasha Fernandez. Welcome to part three of our investigation into substance use at American University.
After learning about addiction on campus and the policies and misconceptions that come along with it, we decided to talk to the administration about their side of the story.
Braden and I decided to follow the same path that Therese, the first person we interviewed, took to find out how the university handles cases of substance use. I organized an interview in October with the Health Promotion and Advocacy Center. I wanted to understand what their role is as an organization on campus and what programs they provide for students.
I tagged along for the interview with Sasha. I had some questions for the staff about the accuracy of their site's fact sheets. I was also interested in finding out what measures are being taken to deal with AU's substance use rates. Here's the director of HPAC and the coordinator for alcohol and other drugs.
My name is Pritma, or Mickey Irizarry is what I'm known by. Mm-hmm. I'm the director of the Health Promotion and Advocacy Center. Okay. And what that basically means is that I oversee all of our programming initiatives and our services that come out of HPAC. I also oversee our peer health education program and our marketing and anything. So I might have my hands directly in some of that stuff and I might not, but I'm just kind of making sure that the wheel is turning in the office and supporting the staff that are really on the ground with the students.
I'm Eugen Kang. I'm a new staff member here, a new coordinator at HPAC. So this role was created and reintroduced this year. My official title is coordinator for alcohol and other drugs initiatives. And as you can imagine, focus primarily on alcohol and other drugs in terms of prevention work, programming. I also do one-on-one student intervention and consultations. So anyone who goes to the hospital for transport because of alcohol or drugs, it's their first offense, and we don't have to get conduct involved. Let's just say it was just a transport. They would come to meet with me.
We were curious about HPAC's definition of substance abuse.
Well, I would call it substance use.
Substance use.
Abuse is defined a little bit differently, but technically, if you were not of age, for alcohol, for instance, you were abusing it. Illegally using something is technically abuse, but some people look at the term abuse as like once it's teetering on addiction or dependence, right? So, but all of those things mean different things mm-hmm. in like the dictionary. Yeah. So I would just like, for the purpose of this, I would call it substance use. So any use that's happening by students is what we address, mm-hmm. whether okay. it's abuse or not.
Quote. So when we talk about drinking, maybe what's associated with abuse or something, we're kind of moving towards the word alcohol use disorder or alcohol use issues mm-hmm. is binge drinking, right? So having 4 or 5 drinks under an hour in one sitting.
We were concerned that the administration might be more interested in disciplining students caught with substances rather than treating the root causes of their use. I asked them what office refers students to HPAC.
The dean of students
office. The dean of students office, okay. Mm-hmm. So they make the determination whether a person will violate like other...
Mm-hmm. Or the person doing the incident report mm-hmm. who's you're on the scene.
HPAC provides wellness consults for students who come in with questions related to their mental health and substance use.
We are not therapists, though. A wellness consult is not counseling, and it's not a replacement mm-hmm. for counseling.
It can be a therapeutic setting because it can feel therapeutic to talk to someone, but I can't provide long-term therapy. It's an open space. It's confidential. I think students mm-hmm. would be glad to know that. Yeah. I think especially if you do want to talk about your own or someone else's use and you're worried about you or someone else, mm-hmm. you can trust that this won't go beyond our meeting.
We knew that Therese had looked for an administrator specifically helping students with substance misuse on campus.
Even though HPAC doesn't have long-term counseling for students, they did tell us about Alexandra Altman, AU's clinical case manager in the university's counseling center. They told us that she works to connect students with third-party healthcare providers nearby.
My name is Alex Altman, and I'm the clinical case manager here at the Counseling Center. The role was created originally because the counseling potential clinicians used to do a lot of their own case management and referrals, and they still do some of that, but my role was created really to kind of help refine the referral process, so that kind of frees up the clinicians here to be focusing on the main parts of their job.
I followed up with her about what her job is and how she can help students that need long-term treatments that the university doesn't provide.
There are a few different ways that students will come to me. I can't reach out to students who are not yet clients of the center, meaning that if someone kind of has heard of me, gets my name from someone else and sends me an email or gives me a phone call, I can't just respond to them. There's a process that they have to go through. So it looks a little different depending on if they're a client of the counseling center or not. If they are already in therapy here, then typically their therapist, who's my colleague, will come check in with me and let me know a little bit of what they're looking for and give me a heads up and then set up an appointment for me with the student. If we are really trying to get someone connected to off-campus care and we think it's extremely important for them, maybe specifically where like substance abuse is concerned or disordered eating or some kind of behavior or need that has a pretty significant health component to it and safety component, then we really want to make sure that that person gets connected. So in those cases too, I might even have the student sign a release form and we might contact providers or organizations in the session.
In the same conversation with HPAC, we also asked about transports to the hospital. If you lived in Letts or Anderson Hall as a freshman, you know that transports are not unusual.
Your first transport at AU doesn't immediately go to conduct. It stops by here first. So that's not very well known. So if you damage property while you're belligerent and drunk, we're going to have to get police involved.
Yeah. So there's multiple codes being broken.
Right.
Okay. In the student code of conduct. And so if you were just transported for alcohol toxicity, that's just a transport. If it's your first time transport, our concern is your well-being. So the reason why students are referred to HPAC is to kind of do that health and well-being check to make sure, are you okay following that transport? Let's talk about the incident. Let's talk about your motivations for use. Let's talk about, you know, the history of your use in general and talk about ways to be safer in the future and harm reduction techniques, anything. So we're just talk about resources, what's going on, like if it's alcohol toxicity plus property damage plus being non-compliant with a staff member, those are multiple things that are going on. So part of the incident might still go through HPAC and part of it might go through student conduct.
When talking about substance use on AU's campus, there's a legend that when you're caught with a substance, you'll face disciplinary action from the university because they don't have an amnesty policy. This causes miscommunication and confusion between what students think the policies mean and what they actually are.
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about our alcohol policies and our transport policy. I think a lot of students and even staff and faculty aren't really sure. And not being sure of something like that is not helpful when there's a crisis or something happening and you're worried about getting in trouble.
And there are two components of it that are almost identical to an amnesty policy. We're just not calling it an amnesty policy. Right. We call it a medical transport policy. So there is a component that addresses the person being transported and the person calling. So it protects both parties. Like we said at the beginning, those types of things will be taken into account. We're here to talk about health and well-being. We're not here to talk about legality.
The only times that we would have to break confidentiality are things like you saying that you want to hurt yourself or others, reports of child abuse. That's kind of like the law.
We asked why the rates of cannabis and alcohol use are so much higher at American University, considering that schools with high drug use are stereotypically large state schools.
There's a lot of research out there that talks about risk factors that contribute to cultures or universities like alcohol or substance use rates, right? AU, in my opinion, as an educator and as somebody who studies this information, is that we kind of have like a perfect storm of risk factors that just contribute to a really high usage rate without enough protective factors. And there's so much research out there about like, what are risk factors? What are protective factors? You know, in addition to the risk and protective factors that we have or don't have, I don't think our campus historically has done a lot to address the culture around substance use. And so what I'm seeing is that a lot of freshmen or first-year students enter the campus not realizing that there's such a party culture at AU because we're not marketed as a party school, right? We don't have a tailgating culture. We're not like a Big Ten. We don't have like Greek housing on campus. We don't have the imagery of being a quote-unquote party school. It just looks different for us, but it still exists. And because a lot of people are not talking about it, I think it sets students up for kind of a dangerous situation where they're not sure what to do in the moment. It becomes like, oh, this is the norm.
For marijuana, there's a huge discrepancy in what students perceive other students are using and what's actually happening.
So our data of students disclosing their own use is 30.3%, but the perceived use is 95.4%.
Wow.
So there's a huge gap in perception versus reality. And students might come back and say, like, well, people were lying when they took the survey and stuff. And we have found that our numbers stay pretty consistent. So even from 2011 to 2018, our numbers haven't changed that much, right, when it comes to any type of substance use. Some of the factors that can contribute to a high-risk use rate on campuses are things like Greek life, athletic presence, which is interesting because those should be protective factors for us because we don't have housing on campus. But things like your location are big, your gender breakdown, your proximity to outlets that sell and distribute alcohol. Your demographics make a difference also. So, like, we're a predominantly white institution, right? So the more homogenous your campus is, you're likely to have higher rates of socialization faster. Like, oh, we all look alike, we get along, so we hang out faster. Whereas, like, if you're a super, super diverse campus, the socialization takes a little longer to form, which means the substance use is delayed. Traditionally, the group demographically of students that use the most are white men from the Northeast. We don't have as many men on campus, so technically that should be a protective factor for us, but we do have a lot of white women, and more research is coming out that women are using at just as high rates or becoming just as risky as men or male users, and that is starting to kind of even out nationally across all ages.
The rates for opioids weren't published on HPAC's fact sheets. Since there is an ongoing opioid crisis, we were curious about whether those drugs are misused on campus.
I will say that our rates of use of narcotics on campus is pretty low. Like, it's a national conversation, like the opioid epidemic and everything, right? The effect on AU, I think, is more secondary than it is direct. I think there are more students on campus that have family members or friends from home that have been impacted by the opioid epidemic rather than actual students on campus who are using. I don't think, from where I sit and the information that we collect, that we have a rampant opioid epidemic at AU. And I'm happy about that, right? So I think for our students, alcohol and marijuana are more of the go-to substances rather than some of the more hard things.
Based on this information, we decided to contact Sylvia Burwell, the president of American University. We contacted her not just because she is the president, but also because she is the former secretary of Health and Human Services. She had experience creating policies to combat the opioid crisis. We wondered how she gets information about the student body related to issues of drug and alcohol misuse.
There are a number of ways that I get to the priorities of the students. There are formal channels and informal channels. So your entire student government actually produces a document on an annual basis of what the priorities are. There's a formal mechanism in terms of those kinds of priorities. But a second formal way that I understand about the priorities of students is through the Vice President for Campus Life, Dr. Fanta Av, who is very engaged with the community, as is her team, whether it's the RAs, in terms of what they're seeing and they're hearing, and our team on campus life in terms of their engagement with students. So they come forward with priorities as well.
In case you didn't realize it, President Burwell tracks every single hospitalization related to alcohol and drug misuse.
If any of our students are hospitalized, that's something I know immediately in terms of that we have a student that's hospitalized and has an acute situation. And then there's the tracking that occurs so that I can see trends. I have a sense of whether alcohol transports are up or down.
In order to address this issue on campus, President Burwell believes in a process of detection, prevention, and treatment. Detection is through people like faculty, staff, RAs, and parents. Any person who could perceive that a student has a problem with substance misuse. Treatment is conducted through resources on and off campus, like HPAC, the Counseling Center, and third-party healthcare providers.
In the prevention space, we use a number of tools in terms of whether that's education, and I think you all know the work of AUX1, you know the work of the orientation. We continue to update what we do in the orientations. Also in the prevention space is having students have a sense of community, because sometimes students turn to these types of tools when they aren't feeling that sense of community, and so they're using something else as a comfort or a way to approach stress or anxiety that they have. The other thing, our RRAs are an important prevention tool in the sense that they are people there to help you understand what resources you have. And some of the things, whether it's you're having trouble in a class, you're having trouble with another personal thing that may be going on, and you have just arrived here but don't know what resources you can get. And so those connections are very important.
We then showed her HPAC's fact sheets that demonstrate the university's rates of substance use.
She specifically discussed research being done on cannabis.
Possibly because of my role at HHS, I am more acutely focused on the marijuana issue. Many people view marijuana as a substance that doesn't have long-term damage or effects. But because it is a controlled substance, the research that's been able to be done in the space is very limited. So one of the things when I was HHS secretary is we made it easier to do that research. In that space of under 24, the questions about what marijuana does to brain development is a place where I believe much more research needs to be done. And I think some of the early research that we see coming in indicates that we probably do not understand the full extent of the damage that marijuana use can do when you haven't had full development of the brain.
HPAC expressed that there was no demonstrated need for naloxone in the dorms.
According to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, naloxone is a medication designed to rapidly reverse opioid overdose. It restores normal respiration to a person whose breathing has slowed or stopped as a result of overdosing with heroin or prescription opioids.
We decided to ask President Burwell about it.
So I think that the use of naloxone, this is a very serious drug in terms of what it does, and it is used in the most acute situations to prevent death, and how the drug works and that sort of thing. This is not a drug that one would want to use lightly or use often in terms of what it does and how it works. And that's both the drug itself, but also how one thinks through what are the best and most appropriate ways to treat different stages of substance misuse. So one of the things I would say, and this is what I would have said as secretary, is you need to have health professionals analyze the data and statistics to understand when naloxone and access to naloxone is the right tool versus other tools that you might use to prevent extremely negative things from happening, but also to get people engaged in the treatments that they need if they are going down a path of substance misuse. You need to analyze what the situation is and the population that you're treating in terms of access to it. I think one of the things that one has done is to try and make it easier so that it doesn't require a health professional. In other words, you don't have to know how to give a shot.
Naloxone is not a recreational drug. Its only use, according to the websites of several healthcare providers, is to stop and reverse the effects of opioid overdose. In addition, this medication is not just a shot, it's also a nasal spray. We understand that it's a serious drug, but an overdose is a life or death situation. The people that are most at risk for overdose are white men between the ages of 18 to 25, which is a large population of students at AU.
In our interview with HPAC, they told us that the university does not have a serious opioid problem. But when we have all the risk factors, isn't it necessary to have this type of training and access to treatment?
Surgeon General Jerome Adams said, knowing how to use naloxone and keeping it within reach can save a life.
Here's the deal. HPAC knows their resources are limited. They even asked us to reach out to our friends who might be interested in helping out with the website. They admit that there's a lot of things that they could do to improve.
I recognize, as a director of this office, that we have a long way to go with being able to catch up and address a lot of the issues surrounding substance use on campus. I think that for a long time, our office and our department was just playing catch up with being able to really comprehensively address the issues. We were able to just maintain being able to see students post-transport and do some very basic programming. I don't think we've had the time or the capacity or the resources to be able to really take it to that next level of comprehensive prevention and addressing the topic the way it deserves to be addressed, just because of lack of resources. And so I'm so happy that we were able to bring Eugene in as a specialist dedicated to alcohol and drug use so that we can attempt to take the subject to the next level of comprehensive education.
Right, so making that clear is one of my goals for sure. Having more programming that feels relevant to students, I think when we talk about alcohol and drugs, it can be super easy to feel preachy or to feel like, oh my God, I've heard this already, you know, like tell me something else. Mm-hmm. I think there's a unique kind of exhilarating challenge of talking about alcohol and drugs in a way that can be relevant and can still be student-centered. And I want to make sure that I bring that. It's kind of like nothing about us without us. I want a lot of student input about how we can do programming, how I can be a better resource.
This is an important topic that needs to be destigmatized. President Burwell made it clear at the end of our conversation that a huge barrier for people needing treatment is the way substance misuse is perceived.
Well, I'm glad that you all are focused on these issues, especially as it relates to the broader issues of mental health and then the issue of the misuse and how that happens in these communities if people aren't coming out. And so one of the things that I hope that your all's work will do is help reduce stigma, because that's one of the biggest barriers to people coming forward.
While American University does have a substance use problem, we have the resources to help students. Here's our biggest takeaways from this investigation. Students need to respond to health surveys so that HPAC can get an accurate idea of substance use habits on campus. There are options for students to get help on campus. HPAC is working to improve its outreach to students, and the Counseling Center can connect people with third-party care providers. Addiction is a disease, not a moral failing. The topic of addiction and overdose needs to be destigmatized so that we can have substantial conversations on what treatment should look like in our communities.
But we still have some questions left unanswered. A lot of this information took us months to figure out, and we weren't the first people who started digging. Why isn't there a clearer explanation of how the university treats alcohol and drug use on campus? And why is it so hard to find the resources available to students that want to seek help? We know that there is training to treat alcohol overdoses. Why isn't there more training for students about how to help someone who has overdosed on opioids? And are we, as students, satisfied with the resources that the university offers for students currently dealing with addiction or substance use? If you believe that you or a friend is struggling with substance misuse, there are places you can go on campus for help. Reach out to HPAC, seek out the Counseling Center, or get in contact with the Clinical Case Manager.
Rip from the Wall is an American University podcast created by AWOL. Our executive producer is Braden Waddell. Our amazing podcast team is made up of Grace Butaioni, Shane Ryden, Maddie Cole, Ethan Lipka, Veronica Del Valle, and me, Sasha Fernandez. Thank you for listening to Addiction at AU. Make sure to tune in to future episodes of Rip from the Wall.